Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why episode 311, my interview with novelist Riley E. Smith. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts. And you know what, guys? Yes But Why is on Audible. And thank you to everyone who's listening, but everybody else, you know, you can check it out. And it's not just my podcast. There's so many other things that are on there, including books that you want to read and Audible originals you didn't even know you needed to listen to, but there they are, and they're amazing. You really need to check it out. It's a great app, and it's a great way to, you know, keep up with all the cool books that the book clubs are being involved in. And, you know, you can also catch up with a lot of your favorite actors who are doing the audio narration. There's also a whole, like, series of people who are getting famous just as narrators on Audible. So, like, check that out, too. It's super fun to, like, see this new wave of, like, almost like YouTube stars, but they're like the narrators of Audible books and stuff like that. So cool. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Sign up, get your account today, and you can be part of this whole Audible world, learning about audiobooks, meeting all these cool narrators and hearing their cool voices tell you fun stories. It's a good time. Enjoy Audible. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband Chris and I run to help podcasters. We are here as a resource for podcasters for whatever they need. Do you need help getting organized? Let me know. Do you need help figuring out how to do some marketing or what to do for social media? Do you need help figuring out how to get your website together? Contact us. We can help you. We've done all these things. We've met lots of people. I've gone to a bunch of podcast festivals. So we have a lot of resources and we've met a lot of people and we're happy to help you any way that we can. So please just connect with us at podcastcadet.com. Check out what resources are there already. And if you need any further help, just get in touch with us through the contact us page and we will help you any way that we can. And, you know, if it happens that you buy a service from us, if you mention code YBY20, you get 20% off. So let us help you at podcastcadet.com. This week on Yes But Why, I'm chatting with comedy writer and novelist Riley E. Smith. She's such a strong, powerful woman, and she's so funny. Listen in as Riley tells me about playing world-building games, teaching sketch comedy, and spearheading the Make Good Creative Network. I now present to you Yes But Why episode 311, Riley E. Smith on how books and improv saved her life. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
Yes But Why.
Yes, but why?
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 This is the Yes, But Why podcast.
So tell me, Riley, when you were a little kid, what was the way that you were playing with your siblings or friends?
So I spent a lot of time by myself. And even when I was with other people, it was like I had big ideas. Like I distinctly remember, like my room, one day my mom walked in and she was horrified because I had taken every single board game in the house and I had laid it out. So there were like 20 some board games on the floor. And she walks in and she's like, your room is a disaster. And I was like, no, this is a city. I'm like, you don't understand. Like the Simpsons chess set, all those characters, like that's a group of people. And then like they have to go to work over here. And I like started to walk her through it. And she was like, this is too complicated for me. I was like 5. And she's like, this is too much. I like, okay, you don't have to clean your room. I think she thought I was just making up a complicated lie. But I had this like whole world laid out. And I remember in first grade, I was always the person at lunch that people would come up to me and be like, what are we playing today? Because I, which is like a weird thing. Like, but like the other children would swarm me and they'd be like, what are we doing? And I would come up with games because I didn't know how to interact with people except in like a goal-oriented context, even at like six. So, which is why all my friends are just improvisers and like people I meet through theater, because if I don't have like a goal that I am working on with them, like it's very hard still for me to meet people. I'm a little better.
Oh my God, so much. That's only people who are my friends are people who I'm actively involved in a project with. I mean, what do you think this is? This is just making friends.
Exactly.
I make friends and then I put it on the internet is what happens.
Yeah. To try to lure in more friends.
Yeah, it's like a group compounding friend situation. Yeah, but it's related to work, so I feel good about it.
Yeah, that's basically how I've organized my life too. It's like the friendship is progress oriented. So I was like that as a 6-year-old.
Amazing.
And I remember one time a girl came up to me and was like, "Can we just play tag?" And I had created this like this game with all these layers of rules. And there was like somebody, like if you were on the playground, you had a certain role and there was like a storyline and there was this whole like elaborate. And I said to this girl, I was like, Mondays are the day we play this. We can play tag later in the week. Like, I feel like I'm going to spend my whole adult life trying to recapture the confidence I had at like 6 years old. So I was just like, I'm in charge here.
I feel the same. I mean, like 100%. I did my best work at six.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. My mom would have she was very political, so she had political dinner parties. And I would just walk around and talk to the adults like I was, you know, an important adult. And yeah, I often think like, man, I wish I could work a party like I did back when I was six.
My parents would always, they threw these like, they would, my parents would have like bangers. Like my parents in their 20s and 30s are so much cooler than I am now. But they would have like, and people would like bring their kids. But my dad taught me how to play poker, but didn't tell any of their friends. And so I would hustle. He taught me how to hustle people. I was like, I'm like 6 to 8 years old, and he'd be like, oh, do you want to come play? And everybody would laugh, and they'd be just drunk. And they, you know, they'd be like, oh, bring your daughter. She could. And I would clear out this table of people. It'd be like eight adults who were playing for like $200 like buy-ins, because like they were serious about it. And like my dad would be like, oh yeah, she'll come in and I just clear out the whole night, and like me and my dad would split our winnings.
Oh my God, I love it. I love the idea that like at the end he's like, here you go, kid.
good job. Next week we'll get him again because none of them are going to remember this.
And then you go back to school and you're like, Monday's a poker day.
Monday's a poker day.
Forget tag. We're playing poker.
You don't mess with tradition, kid. Like, I was just appalled at this person. And I think that's, you know, when I was like, directing is something I'm going to want to do, because I was constantly like directing when I was little. And I think like that's definitely like a big thing that I think of. And the other thing is just like, I was always reading, and I'm always reading, and like huge bibliophile, like to the point of like, it's a problem. Like my boyfriend's like, we have no money. You need to stop. And I'm like, but look at this nice new book that I could get. It's fine. I won't eat this week. It's like, my priorities are definitely and that's definitely from my grandmother. And like, she would take me to Barnes and Noble and she would just like release me. And like, it was the only time I ever got to be by myself, like really I wasn't being monitored, because my mom had no sense of privacy. So she was definitely that person who's like barge into the room or like suddenly interrupt what you were doing. And like, same with my brother, they were both hugely extroverted. So they were constantly like, I want to talk to you. I want to do stuff. And like, I was not, I just wanted like my quiet time. I was a very solemn child and very serious, which is kind of hilarious. At some point I was like, I gotta develop some levity or people are not gonna like me, I guess.
Do you remember having that thought, or do you just think like that was something that happened?
No, actually, I remember in the eighth grade, I was trying to organize my friends into filming a movie. I had written a script. I was trying to put my friends together and I wanted this one guy to be in it, and he just like would not like tell me a time that he was available. And I was so upset and I kept hounding him on this, you know, I'm like 12. I'm like, I'm trying to finish this project and you're being really unreliable. And he's like, I don't want to do it. And I was like, why not? And he's like, you're mean. Like, you're mean. It's not fun to be around you because you're mean to us.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I remember that was like, because I was like, who wouldn't want to be in my movie?
Right.
Like, it was, I'm like, I had to recast him, of course, but like.
Movie happened. This guy just missed it. Yeah. Maybe you've heard of him. His name is Brad Pitt. He's fine, but he doesn't like me.
We don't talk anymore. But yeah, and I just remember thinking like, oh my God, like, and you know, everybody's horrible in middle school.
Sure.
But like me and the other like girls in our little friend group were mean. We were actively mean to people. And because we were the smart, it was like we were preemptively bullying people because we were the smart girls. So we assumed everyone was going to be mean to us, but we definitely like escalated things too far. Like, there was this kid who I remember, he did like a your mom joke. So our desks were those type where like the chairs are like metal attached to the table. I reached out, grabbed the legs of it and flipped him over in the middle of class. And you know, the teacher didn't notice because the class sizes were too big. So like it didn't really address it, but that was the kind of like, somebody would like, you know, smack me and I would like just atom bomb the situation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like that happens a lot, you know, that like people and their own insecurities tend to lash out a little bit, especially during that time, during that time. It's a rough hormonal time.
Well, you get so defensive and protective. And we kind of cultivated this idea between us, like, because we were like I said, like the smart kids, and we were so sure, but like the other kids were just nice to us. They just like, we were weird, like that was fair. So you know, they weren't like jumping over themselves to like sit with us at lunch because like we were always making jokes and stuff that like were didn't really. So this is a shining moment in my life. It's the sixth grade. I think it's middle school. We were asked to come up with some type of presentation for the character counts assembly, which you know, we had like six character traits and we were each supposed to do something. Like, we had this group of people, we were supposed to exemplify that. So I said, why don't we write a rap to the like tune of Snoop Dogg's Drop It Like It's Hot, because I was obsessed with that song in the sixth grade. So we wrote the song, and the best part was that like me and my two friends, we were like, we thought this was so cool and funny and we were on it. The other girls who were working on the project with us asked the teachers if they could like get out of the project because they did not want to have to like participate in this, because it was going to be at an assembly in front of the entire student body. And so I like emceed, and with no background music.
Oh my God, no background music. A cappella, Drop It Like It's Hot.
We did an a cappella character counts rap. And I'm gonna share the chorus with you because I remember it. All right. If you want to go to college, drink up the knowledge. Drink it like it's pop. Drink it like it's pop.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Drink up the knowledge, kids. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. So we did it. Wow. And I remember just silence. And there was a verse for everybody had to sit through a verse for each character trait.
And there were how many?
And there were six.
Whoop!
And the other girls had to wear posters with the character traits on them and like be the background dancers. And so I remember afterwards, me and my friends were livid that people were not appreciating it more.
You guys really are true comedians. I feel like the key to being a true comedian is being mad when the audience doesn't get it. Yeah. I mean,
like, no concern for the audience's desires or what they would find funny or entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
We delivered what we wanted.
Yep.
And then we were like the Philistines.
100%. I feel like I've done that recently. Yeah. I'm like, they didn't get it. That's their problem.
I wrote this amazing rap in one day. We were so mad. We were like, we only had one day. Like, we were... and I think about it, but yeah, so after my friend was like, you're mean, I don't want to work with you, I was like, I feel like I need to make a shift in how I treat people.
Well, which is nice. Suppose that's yeah. good. I mean,
yeah,
yeah. You and know, then, I was thinking about how when you were really young, like all like when you were little, 6, 7, people mm-hmm. were really deferring to you. Like, it yeah. seems such an interesting detail of who you inherently are, that you're this leader, and that like mm-hmm. all these kids were just like, the right thing to do is ask her how to play. So like, I get how a few years later, you know, you could have been a little drunk with power, you know, for years they were asking you to tell them what was fun. So yeah. later, when you're like, by the way, this is fun, and they react badly, you're like, I'm confused. When did the dynamic change? I'm right. You guys listen. What's going on?
Yeah. Like, I felt that I had a responsibility to the... It was definitely a Julius Caesar moment. I thought I was just serving the community by providing them with, like, tasks and projects to, you know, make their life more fulfilling. And then they rebelled.
Oh, God.
I still had like 8 people who did want to do it. Oh. But then 4 years later, I asked that same guy who I was still friends with to be in a play now. And he was like super on board. So I consider that like, okay, growth. Like, I learned how that you cannot be a dictator as a director.
Hmm. What a great lesson to learn in middle school.
Yeah.
And I not like in a professional setting years later.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that like, I'm not still waiting to learn that lesson. At least I think so. I don't know. You could maybe ask people who worked with me and they might be like, oh my God, don't tell her. But
your whole scenario, you're like, everybody yeah. loves me, and they're like, she's yeah. terrifying. Like,
no, yeah,
but you've always so it seems like you're like a collector of people. You're like, you're you know, finding people, giving them fun things to do. Did you always, you know, admittedly your focus was on creating shows and creating games and fun times, but I mean, did you ever have any other jobs like along the way or recently that are organizer but not necessarily theatrical organizer? Like, I feel like you'd be a good community organizer, or like, you know, somebody who's going to lead like a protest or something, you know, just purely from the energy that is clearly inherent in you, that people are like, what she says is clearly the best, so I should follow it. I wonder, how have you used that power?
Oh, well, one thing that I can think, I guess I'm trying to, I don't do a lot of stuff that's not theatrical. Oh, well, I guess
I
my
hear
first
you, me neither.
Yeah, it's I guess my first job out of college, I did end up becoming director of innovation at this account, mainly because one thing I've noticed is that, like, most people don't want to do a lot of things, which is fair because a lot of things suck.
Sure.
Like, so if you're like, well, I'll do that, people will just let you do it. And it's something that I've had to work on of, like, do I actually want to do this thing that, like, do I actually, because I don't really like being the, like, point person in charge, which is kind of, it like comes pretty naturally to me, but, like, I don't like to have to be the detail person who has to, like, make sure, like, I can drive something to get it done, but I don't like to have to be that person.
Why don't you like it? Just
that's I've been thinking about that a lot. I'm not very detail oriented, so things, I can, like, have things slip through the cracks, and I also think, like, it's just a pain to get a bunch of people. I think it would be different in professional context, but a lot of the projects that I've worked, no, it's not. Yeah.
It's... No, the organizational person is always, you know, you have to deal with a lot of BS and a lot of people not showing up, or just as an example, reading emails, just throwing that out there, you know, about projects that they need to work on. And, you know, where was that audition? Oh, I sent you 6 emails about it. You didn't see that's where it was. Yeah.
Yeah. I was, like, running an improv troupe and, like, trying to keep, like, we were trying to direct a show and stuff, and every single week, 7 p.m. on Wednesday, that's when we met. And one night, and every week I would send an email and I'd be like, we're meeting at 7 tonight again. Spoiler alert, it's the same every week. Like, and it's the same place, and we're going to meet at 7 again. And so one day I showed up and nobody else showed up except my boyfriend. Because he knew he had to, and he drove me there. So, like, but like one other person showed up late, and this troupe had like 15 people in it, and no one told me that they weren't going to go. So I sent like a ticked off email and was like, y'all need to at least let me know. You just wasted a ton of my time. And somebody responded with, I don't have time every day to check my emails. What you should have done is texted all of us individually to make sure whether or not we were coming. And you should do that every week. And I said, no, no. And then basically I stopped doing anything for that troop very soon after.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. Oh, man. No, I mean, I hear you with reference to the large amount of people that don't want to, like, participate. And my heart is, the thing that sucks too about improv is that the people who say, why do we have to rehearse improv? Why aren't we making it up? And you're like, I think you need to do something else. I think maybe you need to find another art form. This isn't for you. Maybe you should paint alone in a room. Because this is not for you. However, a significant portion of, like, communities, it is, you know, like, that's the activity. It's really hard. I would say that it happens in all sectors of, if you're going to organize people, there's a lot of not responding. I'm queen respond. Like, I'm right up. I respond to every email. I'm always like, here are 6 points of ideas that I had for this thing. I took notes during the meeting. Here are my notes. Like, I'm a horrific person. No, but there are people, like you say, no. And the reason why I ask you why you aren't into details is because, though, as you discuss it, it makes a little bit more sense to me. In my mind, at the beginning, as you're telling the story of this childhood leadership, and then, like, people are deferring to you, I'm like, babe, you're a leader. Like, that's it. Like, this is who you are. There's no, like, maybe this doesn't work out. But it occurs to me, especially in the theatrical scenario, that the person who deals with the details isn't the director. It's the stage manager. And we just don't really have those as much in improv. Perhaps I would suggest you institute such a thing for your next venture. That way you're not the one sending those emails. There can be a person who's got, because the other part of the whole thing is that because I was a stage manager for many years. I love details. I'm a big fan of details. I'm into it. I will make a schedule. I will get everyone's schedule together and find the like one day that everyone can do something. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I can do that. But in a professional setting, like when you're doing that kind of stuff, you can take the brunt of the annoyance from the people, which I'm fine with. If you'd like to be mad at me, I accept. I don't care at all. You can like me or not like me. It's not really my problem at all. And so that's why I'm good at stage managing, because they'll get like, you know, they'll say those things to you. And I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah, I'm not actually going to do that. So if you'd like that to happen, find another troupe. Awesome. And then
yes.
And then someone else, you know, but the director kind of needs to be this warm, like, hi, let's have a, you need to be vulnerable with me. We need to have this artistic experience together, right? So I think that that's something in the improv world that's like definitely lacking, because when I was the stage manager, I was business, 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 took care of the organizational stuff, cleaned, made everything good. And I was always working with these wild and insane directors. And it was fine. It was fine. Yeah. I wasn't mad about it. People would be like, I'm sorry he's so crazy. And I was like, what? He's fun.
Yeah.
Like, I know everything that needs to happen because he screams it at me. So I'm like, oh, great. All right. Got it. Well, you'd like that? Yes. We'll get one of those. Like, you know, I don't care. But at the same time, like, I'm not, I appreciate that there are different vibes that you need to bring. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I harp on this as a, like, this is your trait thing is that I think it's beautiful. That like you are a director like forever, like people one of the superpowers that I have is that everyone who meets me thinks they've met me somewhere before, and because of that they're immediately comfortable with me. They think that we're friends even if we've never met, and so they're just like, yeah, awesome. And I just let them in and chat with them, and that's great. But it's very helpful for work that I've done, you know, running theater stuff, getting people to do things. You know, they're like, she's my friend. She wants me to have fun times. I'm like, that's all I want, you know, and so that's my superpower. So in your story, as we've been discussing it, the tiny bits that I'm aware of in your life, I'm like, dude, you have got this power. And this power is that people want to do your ideas. Like, what's going on with that? But that being said, there's got to be a detail person in your circle who can help you with this. And wherever you are, if I know someone, I'll let you know. Because it's like, it's just helpful to have that side person to help to do that thing, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the two of the, like, I guess, productions. So my senior year of high school, I wrote and directed a play called Psychodrama, which could not be a better name for a high school play. So, oh yeah. And that was definitely my assistant director, basically my fantastic stage manager, was my friend Gloria. And she was on it, man. She was like, I could mutter something and like next week she'd have it done. It was like, she handled all, like, so yeah, you're 100% right. Cause then I could like be sitting there with, because it was a heavy play. Like, it was about a girl who had been abused by her father in childhood, and then he died, so she's unable to basically process her grief. She becomes a psychologist and works at a insane asylum for the like criminally insane, basically.
A comedy.
Yeah. Exactly. And each of the characters in the asylum represented a different facet of her, like, grief and personality.
Yeah. Nice.
Oh, all of us, we were all 18 and super into this. I got a bunch of people to do it. Two of the guys were football players and never done any theater before. You know who makes fantastic people to work with? Football players, because they were like, where do you want me to stand? Where do you want me? They were on time. They were disciplined. My theater kids did not know their lines. They were breaking stuff backstage. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But they would like not pay attention to my notes. They were always late or would forget about where, but the football players, they were there. They were like, right, which, you know, I did not expect, but they went into it with like, they wanted to know the play, you know, they like literally like the, in their head, they were like, where do I move? How do I, you know, and like, they were working with me on these like intense, you know, like I would run all these, like, I love to do hippy dippy activities with people. Like, I love, that's one of the things I really like as a director is like, I'm going to come up with an abstract exercise that helps this person get into this character. So it's my senior year of, and then so that worked really well because of my friend Gloria. And then senior year of college, I was at a party and this like guy drunkenly walked up to me and he's like, do you want to direct a musical? And I was like, I don't have any music experience whatsoever. I know nothing about music. And he's like, you don't need to. And I was like, okay. And it was like an official like college theater musical that they just like needed somebody. And like it, and in that as well, I had a spectacular like group of tech people. Because I could like, we had our first tech meeting and there were so many very serious young women in this room. And I walked in like hungover. And like I had, like I was like so just chilling senior year. I spent like most of my time working on my Bugs Bunny thesis because like that's what I was writing for my senior year thesis. I was like, the previous semester I had had skin cancer. Like I was just floating. Like I was like, this year I'm gonna spend like so much of it drunk and chill. Like these are gonna be my only modes. So like these very very serious young ladies were waiting for their director to arrive, and I walked in. I was like, hey, so what are we doing? And like everybody was like,
what play are we doing? All right. Yeah,
let me see the script. Okay, that looks fine. So and I was just, and like, I think I was one of the few seniors working on it. And so, you know, no one else was as exhausted as me. And like, they basically like, were like, well, what's your, you know, what do you want us to do? And I was like, we're doing the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Oh.
And I was like, I want it to look like a depressing cafeteria. And like, I want motivational posters in the back and like maybe bleachers or something. Like, I'm like, nothing. I want it to look real sad. Like, I want it to be like a local high school, and everybody, you know, they're all like looking at me and they're like, well, do you want like lights? And I'm like, yeah, we'll do some like mood lights. We can do that, right? And everybody, like, I just, and then like my lighting designer, who I'm still friends with, and she was like, yeah, we can do that mood, and she's like taking notes, and I'm like barely saying anything, and they're all like aggressively taking notes. And yeah, I was just like, and so I just kind of said, and then somebody asked me a question. They were like, well, how tall do you want the bleachers? And I'm like, well, how tall are bleachers? Like, bleachers have a height, like, naturally, right? I'm like, but they're like, how many rows do we need? And I'm like, however many can fit. I was like, yeah, we don't need too many. And they just stared at me like they wanted a number. And I was like,
I didn't make bleachers. I'm not in charge. Go to bleachers.com, see what they got. You know,
I was very much like, this is like your job. I think I said that in the first, like, somebody was like, well, what do you want the costumes to be like? And I'm like, well, you read like the list of the characters, right? And the costume designer was like, yeah, I've looked at the characters. And I'm like, well, they're kids, right? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, so make them look like kids. And she just stared at me.
And you're like, okay, do you get where we're at? We're in a depressing high school. These are the depressing high school kids. Go.
Yes. Just go. Like, run with that. So, yeah. And like, they're like, well, hilarious. Do you want like a color scheme? And I'm like, do you want a color scheme? And then we got to like a point in the meeting where people they started talking about details. They were like, where are we going to source this? We'll start building on this day. Like, let's get the drawing together. And I leaned forward and went, so do y'all need me for the rest of this? Or honestly, some of them were so mad. There were a lot of people in that production. Like, it went fantastic. It ended up being a really, really great play.
May I ask, were you a theater major? Like, did they just randomly yank you from a party and you were doing something else? Or were you at least part of the existing culture? Because I'm just thinking, if this is a group of people who one of them thought they were going to be the director, and then all of a sudden you get plucked and, put in. Yeah. Because I've had that scenario where I didn't realize, but I'm hired to do this work. And when I walk in, everyone seems upset with me. And I'm like, I don't know why everyone's upset with me. And it's because they thought they were doing it, and they instead outsourced the director. And it was me, you know? So
I was the president for 3 out of my 4 years. I was president of the sketch comedy troupe at my school.
Nice.
So no one wanted to be the director of this musical. The original person who was supposed to be the director said she wanted to be the producer, which was weird because she then attempted the rest of the production to have a power struggle with me, which I was like, just not do. Like I said, I was like, I had cancer 3 months ago. You do not bother me.
Yeah. If she had known you as a child, she would have known there was no chance just from the get. Listen, skin cancer or no, I've never been fazed by people trying to take my power away from me. Oh. No, thank you.
We play tag on Thursdays.
Are there any football players in this? If not, I'm out.
Yeah. I need some discipline here. But from you, not me.
Now I'm how can I run a theater workshop like a football workshop? Like, I'm like, what could I make them run? Like, would that be wild if I had like an intensive and like the first day I just make them run laps and they're like, what are we doing?
Yeah. You're building discipline.
You're doing this. Stamina. Be here by 6 or the doors are closed.
Breathing exercises. Eat a steak before practice.
Eat a steak. No vegetarians in this play.
Yeah, so it was super weird. I had never done, I had done some theater things, but only weird stuff. And, in college.
Only in high school, stuff.
I did a ton of theater. I did something, every term. And I'd been in the improv troupe at my high school since freshman year, which is cool because, I can say I've been doing improv since I was 13.
That's great. I didn't know improv was a thing until I turned 30. So the idea that your school had it is great. I had no idea for years.
It was an amazing opportunity. And I showed up and I auditioned. They had it set up with a varsity and a junior varsity, which is a weird way to do art.
That's how the sportos try to include us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're like, hey, listen, you did a play. Here's a jacket. You're like, we didn't really do it for the jackets, but I'll take it.
So I did that.
So you lettered in drama a couple times?
Yeah. I lettered in improv. And I always got cast in weird. My very first theatrical role, I wanted to be, in middle school, I wanted to be the Wicked Witch of the West, but the director gave that to her daughter, and I was so angry. I was, the nepotism, I didn't know that word yet, but I was angry. And I got cast as the Scarecrow, which actually kind of started a trend of me, wanting a character who I thought was, angry and cool, and then getting cast as the funny one, which was correct. And the Scarecrow was super fun, and I did pratfalls, and it was just very goofy, and I don't think anyone asked me to do pratfalls, but I did them anyway, and that was a ton of fun. And then in And then in a couple cool things, like I got cast in a role that was not it was a non-speaking role, except occasionally this character, this was in another, in like insane asylum. I don't know why that was such a theme.
I mean, there's I do a know lot why, of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a theme in plays, I think.
Yeah.
But like people love to do that. But this character only spoke in like listing things that she hated. I had three monologues, and besides that, I just kind of lurked, and I love it. Like, honestly, that in the director was like apologetic when she gave me this role, because she was like, I'm sorry, it's not a lot of lines. And, you know, she was like, I really hope that you'll take it. And I was like, this is going to be so much fun.
You're like, angry lurker. I've been hoping for this my whole life.
I have been training every day.
If only people would let me angrily lurk. They keep asking me how to have fun. Ugh.
I just want to lurk.
Just let me lurk. I just want to stand here and stare at you and make you think you've done something wrong. Is that not enough?
Is that not enough? So that was a ton of fun.
That's so funny.
I also got to be the Mad Hatter.
Ooh.
Yeah, we did an Alice in Wonderland. That's one of my funnest memories, because my goal was, you know, drama teachers have a hard job.
They do.
It's just long and short of it. And I imagine you must get so bored some days sitting and, you know, just helping high schoolers grind through rehearsal. So my goal every day was to find some way to make my drama teacher laugh. So one day I distinctly remember I had long hair. They teased it. So actually I had ended up kind of like how Johnny Depp had his look, but my hair stood up like this and the hat rested on my hair. So my hair was straight up and the hat would like rest on my hair. So I found out this way of like bowing that I would like catch the hat when it fell off.
Nice.
But yeah, yeah, that was fun. But like, and the other thing is I'm very blind. I'm like very close to legally blind. But I couldn't do any shows in glasses, and I didn't have contacts. So I was constantly knocking into things and knocking things over. And I just had to, like, pretend like I was clowning.
Why can't you wear your glasses? It's not like this is a professional production.
Yeah, the director was just like, the Mad Hatter doesn't have glasses. And I was like, all right, guess I'm going to break some of your props that you bought with the no money this program has.
Right?
So,
that you bought yourself with your own money.
Then I'm sorry, but definitely she did have to go and get everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I love
props to drama teachers, man. They're so important. But one day during rehearsal, I like completely, over the course of the whole scene, like increment by increment, when I should have been maybe focusing on the performance, I like shifted how I was sitting, and it would be like a centimeter at a time until by the middle of the scene I was upside down in my chair and no one had noticed. It was like boiling a frog. I just like turned a degree at a time until my feet were in the air and I was entirely upside, and then I just hear the director start cracking up. She just like, and she goes, And like, you know, we kept going with the scene, but at the end of it, she was like, when did you start doing that? And like, she was like, I didn't notice till you were upside down with your hat on, like on the ground. And like, it was stuff like that.
You know, you probably did make your drama teacher's day. Like, yeah. I have taught a lot of middle school and high school theater, yeah. And like, you know who the people who care are, like, yeah. Immediately. Usually I make them tell me up front, like at the beginning, because I teach camps, like summer camps. And a lot of times parents just toss their kids in camps with no interest in the topic, right?
Absolutely.
So I'd be like, who came here because they wanted to take a theater camp? And they'd raise their hands. Who came here because your parents made you? Oh, you guys, great. And I just make a note. And I don't make those kids do as much stuff. Like, or like, I give them like a smaller role and I'll talk to them individually and be like, are you interested in speaking? And they're like, no, I don't really want to. Cool. No problem. How do you feel about moving chairs? And they're like, I like it. I'm like, cool. We need chairs to be moved. Appreciate your help. And then, like, they write it and they're part of it, but they just don't want to perform. That's okay. It's all good, right?
Yeah.
But the people who love it, like, clearly you did and do, you know, that's who you're there for, right? You're 100% there to keep that person's love alive in that thing and to tell them you're doing great. Like, keep doing what you're doing because you're amazing at this. Like, so at the end of the day, I mean, it can be hard to deal with the kids, but, you know, I feel like working in theater is hard enough, but if you can find yourself a solid job, like at a school, I mean, mine are always freelance camps, so it's never, like, I never worked for, like, a school district or whatever, but from the people I know who do it, I'm like, no, no, mad respect. Like, you have, like, benefits as a theater teacher. Like, I teach theater every day. I got no benefits. You know what I mean? It's fun. Good times. You know, occasionally I'm teaching, like, actor kids who, like, are in movies or, like, will be in movies. And that's pretty amazing. But, you know, in the hoi polloi crowds where you're like, there's a smattering of 12 kids, maybe one of them cares. You're like, okay, great. Let's figure it out.
I think a lot of it for me was my parents were just figuring out what activity they could leave me at so they did not have to watch me.
Sure.
And they figured out the only thing that I liked was the theater stuff. And they were like, that works.
Now, how did you transition? You said that you really loved the serious roles. You're doing these plays, but you love the serious roles, but you still might want to make people laugh. How did you transition now as a post-college? You're an adult. You're trying to get out in the world. And comedy seems to have been the path you took. How did you decide to do that, and where did you go?
Once I graduated, like I said, most of my time in college was pretty much focused on comedy. And I think when I was 4 years old, I wanted to be president. And I kept that up until about junior year of college. And then I was like, that seems like a horrible job. Everyone hates you. People literally try to shoot you.
Regularly.
Like, you have to have a whole group. There's a whole organization whose only job is to keep people from shooting you. Like, that is how badly people want to shoot you. And I was like, I don't. And, like, no matter how good of a job you do, you're going to do a bad job. Like, it's just such a, like, an insanely complicated thing. And at, you know, at
you're
best.
You're going to do a bad job. No, you're hilarious. It's exactly right.
So I was like, I don't want that at all. I was an English and poli sci major with a business minor, and I dropped that poli sci like junior year. I was like, this is not worth it. This is very depressing. I took a class on civil wars and I was like, I don't want to have to fix any of that. So I was like, you know what I want to do? I want to make people happy. I want to help people feel a little better. I want to help people feel less alone. Like the books that I read did for me when I, or the movies that I watched did for me when I was younger. And cause that's really why I survived. I definitely think that books and improv have saved my life on a number of occasions. And I was like, I want to do that. Like, I want a little girl to open up one of my books and come away from it. You know, she's, her tears are dried and she's going to conquer the world. And that really cemented for me, because right out of college, I became a business analyst.
Woo!
Yes.
Talk about stepping away from comedy.
You know, my parents watched some of my sketches from college, and my dad seriously said, you know, if business doesn't work out for you, you can always fall back on comedy.
That's kind of hopeful. I don't know. I mean, literally, my parents were very supportive, but I don't know they ever said that. So
it's my parents have like an insane amount of faith in my abilities. And like, it's it like not to the point of like, oh, I feel so supportive. But like, they just, they're like, My dad was that person who was like a 99%. Where'd the last percent go? That classic like dad joke. So that, you know, gives you complexes for the rest of your life. So
right. A-, huh? Well, next time, let's not have a minus, huh? You're like, I literally am the best in the class.
Yeah.
There's a curve because of me. There's it's a problem.
Everyone's mad at me.
Yeah, I am a winner. I don't know what the problem is here.
I am a winner.
I'm a winner. Yeah. I don't know why I didn't know I was a comedian immediately.
So I was a business analyst and I hated this job every single day of my life. It was, this term is overused now, but it was Kafka-esque. Like, cause it was such a huge, we worked for a huge, we were contractors working on a massive, massive campus. And then they asked us one day, how many people work for you on this account? And the account director was like, we don't know. And they were like, what do you mean you don't know? Like, we're paying all the salaries. And that we were like, well, you, and the guy like, you know, like did some dub. And I was like, oh my, like, we don't know how many people are here. And like, they were like, can you give us an estimate? And the account director was like, somewhere between 20 and 200.
There's a professional person who answered a question like that. Dear listeners, if you're ever like, oh, I don't know if I can answer the question at work right, know that that person probably kept their job. 20 and 200 was a viable swath of people. And the, I'm sure the people were like, well, you should find out. But they weren't like, how dare you? And smacked him across the face.
Yeah, it was insane. And, you know, that guy did eventually get promoted to a higher position within the company.
Of course he is. He's the CEO now.
Yeah, obviously, because that's what happens. But we tell everyone, like, oh, you couldn't possibly. And I don't know what, like, it's, I could, it was just, like, I was miserable every day. And I'm like, well, I could just be miserable for like, or like, I could not be miserable. There we go. I could not be miserable and make slightly less money. Yeah. So I ended up in one more. I was like, maybe I'll do marketing. I was like, I'll do marketing. And then that's creative. That's a compromise. And that was a whole, I'm not even going to go into it. It was just an awful experience. And I was like, well, this is horrible. And then Corona hit. And I started to work remote for this horrible person. And he put me, made a tactical error, put me on half hours. He put me on half time, which gave me the rest of the day to start doing freelance work. So in a couple of months, because I had already started doing some freelancing, I had some fiction writing contracts, and I also did some like marketing, and I did a little bit of like blog content mill stuff, which thank God I don't have to do anymore. But I had already started freelancing, and so I really ramped it up. I was working just like all day, sunrise to sunset. I was doing some kind of work and not the work that he was paying me for the most part. Because at that point, I was like, I don't care about you. You're a bad person. And I was like, and the world is on fire. Right. So I eventually got enough, like I got a bunch of certifications, to help with my freelancing, and I jumped. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I was like, I hate it. I hate every day. I hate talking to this man on the phone. I hate the work that I'm doing. It's not, he would edit my choices of emojis. I was doing social media. I was supposed to be the marketing director for this man, and he would go in and re-edit. At the end of every day, he had me send him an email that accounted to the minute for what I had done that day. And I was like, this is, I do not like you, and I am not going to let you control my life in this way, in this like micromanagement way. I'm like, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of like, there was a lot of like bad stuff going on with that whole thing. And I just jumped. I told him, like, I had enough freelancing jobs to make enough money. And so I guess I didn't just jump. It took like a year of prep and careful planning. But I think it's funny to me because sometimes people, you know, people are nice and they'll be like, wow, you're brave. And I was like, the other option was dying. Like, I hated this. It doesn't feel to me like I made a brave choice. It feels to me like I made the only possible choice.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I feel like though there is a certain level of strength in allowing yourself to do what you want. Most people believe they're supposed to do something for someone else or they have to earn somebody else's, you know, approval to make a move, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's good that you have been strong since a tiny child in your own beliefs. And you said, I wish I still had that confidence, but you do, because many, 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 many thousands of people stay in shitty jobs that, like, they, where no one knows what is happening. Like that business that you worked at is still running, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
Like those people are still getting salaries for not having any idea what the square footage of the building is that they manage. Like they're, you know, the idea of honestly making a decision to do what you want to do in your own life is brave. It seems terrifying because you're like, I just walked away from the possibility of benefits forever. And also I get dirty looks from everyone I've ever met because they're jealous. But somehow, you know, absolutely, I'll be working. And when you said sunrise to sundown, I was like, ooh, those sound like nice hours. I'm like, sunrise to when I fall asleep. Like, that's...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but I mean, and it's hard because when you're a strong person like you clearly are, it's hard to, like, see... I know, you're like, you're even eschewing this idea. You're like, no, I'm not. But you are because there's so many other people who don't stand up for themselves ever, who like the manager who told you to just appease this dude.
Yeah.
She didn't have the strength to not appease this dude.
Yeah.
I'd be like, tell him to screw. I'd be like, where is he? Get him on the phone.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
That's not how, you know, most people just let it happen and say things like, that's just the way he is. Like, I'm like, all right, I'll work on improving that. Like, and I will talk to you directly. Hey, you can't do that. Let me tell you why.
Yeah.
You know, but people aren't strong. People don't make decisions for themselves. And also, they don't believe that they should.
Yeah.
You know, so the strength that you have, the, like, confidence in your own abilities to freelance, I mean, it's amazing.
And that was just what was insane to me, is how much people were actively like, you cannot do this. This is an impossible choice. But then, like, you Google, like, how to become a freelancer, and people are like, I did it. And I'm like, well, if this person who has like 60 typos on their WordPress and the site looks horrible is like doing this for a living, I can manage this. Like, it was just weird to me. I was like, people are doing it. And I guess, yeah, I think, like, you know, there's a strain of confidence into narcissism in my family where we are like, I can do that. Like, stuff that really most of the time, like, you know, maybe you should take a second. Like, they were like, do you want to direct a musical? I was like, I have no experience in that. Okay. It's just like, well, I'll give it a shot. And I think a lot of that actually comes from improv.
Yeah.
A lot of that really, I think the improv taught me, it's the only thing in my life that taught me the beauty of failure. And, like, the only thing where it's like, you have to go up. And, like, my favorite memories are the times when I screwed up big time. Like, when I just went up and was not doing any of the improv rules right, but it just ended up super fun. And, like, it improv really taught me, like, you just got to go out and do the thing. And I think that, like, the more that I take that into my own life, that I, like, the happier I am. And that's what, and on the other end, I learned a ton from working what I learned in one of the things that I learned from being a busy business person that I think has really helped my art is that meritocracy does not exist. There is no such thing as merit. It is luck. It's a combination of luck, privilege, and timing, and maybe like some persistence and who you know. It's not, it's like, these are the things that actually, like, this is something that's helped me. Like, I just self-published a book. A lot of, that's another thing that people are like, you know, it's so brave for you to, you know, put that out there. Like, and for me, I'm like, it doesn't matter if your book is good. Like, that's not what makes, like, that's like, I tried for a really long time to get an agent and like a literary agent, but you know, this is a debut novel. It's extremely difficult to get an agent, especially during the pandemic. A lot of agents were taking time off, or they were just like, there's not as much money getting pumped into everything. So it didn't work out. And, you know, I could have been like, oh, well, you know, the traditional people don't think my book is good. And I'm like, no, that's not what it means. It means I didn't find the right person, or like my, you know, I'm not like, I don't have the right keywords that they're trying to publish this year, or it's merit has nothing to do with it. So if you spend a bunch of time wrapped up in, am I good? That doesn't matter. There are people making six figures, high six figures, who have no skills, which is like a sad thing, but the world is chaos. Like, and that helps my art a lot, and it helps me jump into things that otherwise, yeah. If I was worried about, am I good at this, you know, maybe I wouldn't do it. But I've just always been like, that doesn't matter, because of improv and because of what I learned in the business world. It doesn't matter if that's just not how the world actually works. And in a way, you know, it's kind of, for me, it's been freeing.
Yeah.
Because then I could say to myself about my book, like, and about my other projects, am I going to enjoy this? Do I think other people are going to enjoy this? And that's what ultimately made me think, like, I have to self-publish this. And people are really enjoying it.
And also, like, legit, the literary world isn't what it used to be. You know, it's not like 1980s New York anymore. Like, they're just the industry is a different thing. I would say, so many people are self-publishing. It's almost better. You know, it's like trying to be, it's like podcasting versus trying to get a radio show on the radio. It's just not really how it works anymore. You know what I mean? Like, you're not getting a radio show on like the local station unless, you know, various things fall into place and you know, who even knows what they're looking for or whatever. So making your own thing is a lot easier. And then the other thing is, and I learned this from podcasting. I went to this podcast festival and they were like, never be upset about the number of people that listen to your podcast, any number from 5 to 5 million. Literally just imagine that number of people in a room. Say it's 100 people. Yeah. So you only get, you know, 100 listens to everything every time. Yeah. It's not a million. People aren't, Coca-Cola's not asking you to be a sponsor. You know what I mean? Like, but there's 100 people who you're connecting with. 100 different, imagine them all in one room. That's a lot of people. Right. Yeah. And the idea of that is the world and the way that we distribute art is more like looking for your niche audience. Like you saying right now that people are enjoying your book. Awesome. Because it's getting to the right eyes. It's getting to the people who want this book. Right. Yeah. As opposed to it just goes everywhere. And then it's like, who needs it? I don't know. Or like how many people just read bestsellers, right? Yeah. And it's like, what does that mean? A bunch of people? You know, it's like every time my husband and I watch a movie that everyone says was good, quote unquote, we hate it. Yeah. We're like, everyone says this is good? This one? Mm-hmm. This is the movie. Right? Should we look it up to make sure? Oh, good review. Good review. Good. I hate this movie. Why are we watching this movie? Right? I mean, like, you just don't know. You need to find, like, who your people are, right? Yes. Like, now I listen to specific podcasts. Yeah, occasionally the podcasts I listen to are famous people, but, like, I'm not listening for their opinions unless I know that me and that person share a lot of similar things right. where you're like, oh, he likes these things that I like and these things that I like. So I'm going to like the other things he's suggesting.
Yeah.
The beauty of the internet is we can find our own little niche markets and we don't need agents and publishing houses. I mean, publishing houses are just closing down. Yeah. You know, like, they're hardly printing lots of books anymore. They just print them when you order them.
Yeah. You
know? And it's, easier. So
that's the thing is, like, they don't – so there's, like, very little benefit to actually traditionally publishing. It is essentially just a status thing because they do not help you with marketing. An author basically does their own PR. Mm-hmm. Unless you're already like a huge name, your publisher is not going to, they're just going to sell to bookstores that order your book. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's just, they handle distribution. And so I was like, well, why am I busting my ass? You know, and like, you know, maybe someday that'll be what works for me. But I was like, man, I want, and also if you're trying to publish, like maybe it takes me another, you know, 10 years. Sometimes people will say like, oh, I queried my novel for 10 years. Stay in there, you know, keep pushing. And I'm like, I'm not going to do anything for 10 years.
I mean, I appreciate the idea. Like if you wanted to sell it in a different way, right. I get spending 10 years because maybe you need to like work your way into different, you know, like say you want to sell your novel to be made into a movie. Yeah. You're going to need to figure out how that gets done, you know, and talk to this person, that person, get in there, you know, that might. And then if you sell it outright, they just hand you a check, you walk away. Okay, great. Sometimes they're like, you want to hang out and like have thoughts while it's being filmed. And you're like, okay, I guess I will hang out now. You know, I mean, but there's 1,000 possible ways to create that. You know, yeah, it's the systems of professional artistry aren't built for artists.
Yeah.
You know, like the only people in art, like famous actors, only the top tier famous actors are the people who even get to choose what they get to do.
Yeah.
Right. Like all the rest of them are caught in, like you're talking about, if you are creating a novel or writing something, you have to have your own team for PR. So do all these actors, right? Yeah. They have a team of people making sure they look good and work out and get their, you know, they got agents and managers all working together for this thing. But they're not only, like I said, only top tier, like millionaires already get to choose what movies that they're in. Like Tom Hanks probably gets to decide what he's in, but further down the line, you know, actors who you might know their name even. Oh yeah, they're in this great thing. No.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, even like, what was it? I was thinking that show, This Is Us, had a bunch of actors in it that were unknown previous to that show. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think the next show they get to like make a decision? No. No, they're famous now. They're famous, so that what they've done now matters to more people. There are people who rely on them for their money, which means then they're going to be pushed into whatever they think will make them the most money until they get to the high point. I mean, heck, Mandy Moore's in that. You'd think she'd have carte blanche, and I think she produced it a little, but, I mean, did she want to be in a television show? Maybe she wanted to relax for a minute. She'd been literally singing and acting since she was a child. Take a break, maybe. No, she had to get a job. That's what she does. It's her work, right? So she's like, what's up, NBC sitcom? Yeah, great. I'm the mom. Sounds good. Like, who knows what level of true decision-making any artist at any level gets to make. So if you have the beauty of getting this autonomy for the self-publishing, take it. It might be the last time. Say this picks up and like you get a publisher call you and they're like, let me do it. I want to put this up. It's out of your control all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's what I figured is like, in this way I can decide where the series goes. You know, if I had gotten picked up on for an agent from this, like, I would have been talking, like, that agent and then that publisher would have been telling me, you know, this is where we're going to rename this, you know, it, even like that little thing. And it's like, I believe in collaboration. I try not to, but like, I try not to be too much of a stickler, but that's just like the example, you know, the first example you think of is like, oh, we're going to rename this or we're going to redo this. When I was writing it, I had these, you know, you have your like shower acceptance speeches. For me, I was imagining arguments with publishers. And one of the things that like they said that like my imaginary publisher was saying like, oh, we think we should change this and your main character to a guy was like one of the imaginary. And I laid into them in my shower and was like, no, I'm taking this out. I'm going. This is my one thing that I will not like. I was already thinking, you know, because I have an idea of how this industry works. And I was already thinking, like, what would I be willing to compromise on? You know, if I'm talking to an agent and an agent is like, well, I'd really like to do this, but you have to change X, Y, and Z about this manuscript. Because, you know, you get an agent, they tell you things they want to change. Yeah. And they bring it to an editor. The editor tells you things they want to change. And then you've got your publisher's team. They tell you things that they want to change. And so you've got all these different people who they're thinking about what is going to sell on a bigger scale. And it's like, you know, I don't blame any of the individuals in that process, but it doesn't, I mean, the other thing that gives me a lot of confidence is I like to pick up books that have sold really well and they are not good.
Yeah. Like I said.
Yeah.
You read the thing and you're like, wait, what? What is this? It's this almost like bad. What you're talking about made me think of Harry Potter. The last book that she wrote was 100% affected by the audience, by the publishers, by public opinion. It wasn't truly whatever it should have been from an artistic standpoint. It was what it became, how it got created by that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's something to that. I mean, it's like a different vibe that you have to, you're like, am I willing to do this? And I've often said, like, if I wrote a screenplay and somebody wanted to take it and pay me money for it and then put it on a shelf and never make it, I'm like, fine, I'll take that. That sounds good. No problem. No problem. Except no one ever gets to read it. Cool. No one was going to read it beforehand. So might as well have cash and no one reading it. Right. So, but there's something to that. And I think it was many years of sketch comedy and 1,000 actors not saying the right words where I was like, that's not the joke. All right. And so then I lost the ability of like holding on to the joke, right? I was just like, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be. And that's how I've always imagined my own, you know, writing path. It's like, I write it and then whatever happens to it after that is just whatever happens. Like, I'm not sure what it could be. But I'm inspired by your self-publishing situation. Cause like I said, I myself am working on a novel as well. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool. This is interesting. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Did you end up going self-publishing through a small press or did you self-publish through like Amazon? What did you do?
Yeah. So I self-published through Amazon because they're pretty much the only option that does not ask for your money. Mm-hmm. Up front.
Also, they do help with a little marketing. Yes. Because your like thing pops up in similar searches.
Yes, I know for sure that as soon as I published my book Cardinal, they showed me to some people because there are reviews on there that I know I don't know. Like a lot of my purchases have been word of mouth, but basically like first day, somebody bought it and read it and reviewed it. And I don't know who they are. They were very nice about it and I'm very grateful to them, but you know, it's just somebody who saw it cause it was on Amazon and that's the genre that they read. So ultimately I was like, hey, I want to get this to as many people as are going to enjoy it as possible.
Sure.
And it's and like Amazon KDP is Kindle Direct Publishing, super easy, in a lot of ways. And like the only thing is like, you are in such a big pool, but you would be in that big pool anyway. You have to do your own marketing, which you would have to do anyway. So a lot of my sales have been word of mouth. Also, I do a ton of like What I think is fun about the book, I say that on Twitter. And then people are like, that sounds fun to me. And then they're interested in the book. So I know I've made some sales that way. The other thing that I like about self-publishing is I get to set the price. So the paperback of Cardinal is definitely less than you would have to pay at a bookstore, because books are so wonderful, but they're so expensive.
Yeah.
So I, you know, ducked it down as much as I, so where I was still making some royalty money, but like, you know, I got to make that decision, which was really cool. And you just like, it's just such an easy way to share with people.
Yeah.
You know, you can make it like somebody told me, they were like, your book looks no different from like a professional book. Like I took the time to like format it correctly, except like one chapter is wonky. I got to fix it. But like, I took the time for the most part to not really detail oriented. By the end of this process, I was like, just publish. But like it looks the same. People get to read it, enjoy it the same. My grandmother bought two copies and sent me in it. Basically, that's it. I'm just writing so that my grandmother can read my books. And so but I just realized, I was like, what is my real goal here? Like I saw a tweet that somebody was like, if you don't get on a bestseller list with your first book, will you stop writing? And I was like, that is insane. Anybody who says yes to that question should not attempt this. Like I don't like to gatekeep, but if you are going into this, there's very few things where I'm like hard and fast, this is not for you. And if you are going into this, and anybody who says yes to that, like I would have to get on an Amazon bestseller list with my first book or it'd be a waste of time. Don't do this. You're in this for the wrong reasons. You're not going to finish your book, I'm almost certain, because you don't get praise while you're writing the book. Nobody cares while you're writing the book, unless you're like really good at talking it up. Like I was lucky to have a supportive writers group that I was in, who we all shared ideas. I have several friends, you know, I'm around arty people. So there was, you know, I make sure to cultivate people who will listen to me talk about my book, but you don't really get support or praise until you finish the book. And then, you know, people have to want to read the book. So the hubris to me of like even thinking that question, I'm like, that is wild. Like you gotta pay some dues here. Like you gotta build some cred with people. Like
also realistically, like and to harken back to what we were talking about earlier about how we're like clearly comedians because we only want ourselves to enjoy it and we don't care if the audience likes it, like. You know, you have to find who those people are that are just like you and then give them something. And that's going to require efforts that are different. And also, like, just because, you know, also knowing that you've written sketch comedy, like, I can imagine you've likely written hundreds of sketches and maybe people liked 20 of them. You liked all of them, maybe. But, like... that, you know, so you can't stop writing or stop acting because you don't get accolades, right? Oh, I didn't win this local actor award. I'm no longer going to keep doing acting in my town. Dude, do it for you. Don't do it because some other, like, randos said that you were good. Yeah. Like, these people don't care about you. And, you know, I appreciate that in the larger business of it, like they base stuff on numbers or whatever, but even some of my favorite movies are movies that were not hits, did not make back the money that they spent to make it. Like that the artists themselves are like, that's my one failure. And I'm like, that's my favorite movie. Like, you know, like, no, I watch it constantly. Like, you know, it didn't make you $2, but I've bought it 4 times on Amazon. It's gonna make you a couple dollars now. Yeah. Like I bought the VHS. It's good. You know, I don't still have a VCR even, but you know, it's like you find the things that you like. That's the beauty of right now. You know, this isn't back in the day where, like, if you didn't get published, that's it. You might as well just burn it.
Right.
Yeah. Like, now it's like, no. You know, Either that or you just can use your anger to write a manifesto, and then, you know, it's a different kind of book. but it's a book, you know.
Yeah. I feel so lucky to have other options. Granted, like, you know, there were fewer people trying to get into the industry. I think, you know, show, because when you had to like type out the manuscript and then make a copy and then mail it, but the publishing industry was then even more limited. Yeah. And now it's just, you can do your own thing, but I think you have to, and like, you know, I'm gonna throw a cliche out there. You have to love the process. You have to love, it's ultimately why I decided that I like directing and I like writing. And I like doing comedy. I like performing comedy live, but I decided pretty soon after I moved out here that I did not want to be a like traditional actor. I did not want to go that role. I had a headshot made. I was like, okay, I'm going to try to get an agent. I'm going to try to go. And I was like, very quickly, I listened to a couple people and I was like, I don't love the process of performing someone else's words so much that I could do this for the rest of my life and not get, and like, even if it means, cause like a working actor, a really successful actor, like, as you mentioned, as you know, is like, you're like, I got three lines on Community. You know, like I had a teacher who was like, he was a working actor. He's like, he does a lot of different things. You know, sometimes he does stuff that he's more into, but he was like, yeah, I got the call back. And we were all like, you know, hell yeah, man. Like you are like, you're the cashier on the, for like one episode of like Superstore. Like that's awesome.
Yeah.
That like we all cheered. And like, it's, I was like, oh man, like I cannot choose this based on the idea, like, do I love the process enough to celebrate every, like, those moments?
Yeah, it's hard, and because that could be your whole life.
Yeah,
you know what,
yeah,
I mean, like, I know a number of people that like two lines in a Law and Order or something, yeah, is like their bread and butter. They're, yeah, constantly like side guy number four, you know, on everything. You know, if you pay attention, which I do now, because now I'm like obsessed with side actors. Like, I'm like, oh my God, the guy in the back, that guy was in Workaholics. I remember him. Okay. This girl over here, she's in a shoe commercial, two shoe commercials.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just because I'm into it and I want to support those people and I care about them in their journey. Because it's like, Brad Pitt, you're great. Super awesome. I'm glad that every time you get into a movie, they finally give you food to eat. But like, here's the thing. Like, all the rest of the people that are around you, those are the people. You know, like there's some new movie that is coming out. I keep seeing trailers for Brad Pitt's movie. Am I impressed that Brad Pitt's in the movie? Nah, I mean, I like him, so he'll be good. He'll be good. But what I'm looking at are all the other smaller actors that I see, or like actors where I'm like, ooh, I've suddenly seen this guy in like five different movies. You're moving up, brother. Like, you know, like different things. I enjoy that part. That's the part, you know, I watch a whole television show. It's all famous people, but one person, and it's that one person. I'm all like, did you see that? That was amazing what they did. That was like really great. They're like living in the world, you know, like... I'm so much more upset, but that's my thing, you know, like that's what I'm into. I think you've got such a strong like pull to be who you are, and like clearly you have been this like leader, this like driving force of creativity for so many people in your life. Like, just maintain that and keep the confidence up that you're doing the right thing, because you are. I mean, you know, like we established, you were connected to me through a friend, a person who was like, this person's so cool, they should be on the show, right? That's awesome. Like, that's great that your talent was so much that they were like, other people need to know about this. Can you put her on the show? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I've enjoyed chatting with you so much. This has been such a great conversation and so great. So wait, I'm going to ask you one last question, because you and me have been talking for hours. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you one last question, and then I'm going to say goodnight to you, because I've had a great time, but both of us need to go to sleep. Yeah. For you are putting work into these projects. Freelance is a slog. It like takes a lot of effort. I'm sure you're writing a lot of things that are not fun novels for yourself, but writing a lot of other marketing, it sounds like, a lot of other stuff like that, and teaching people all around. But what are you doing for you? What are you, what are you doing to creatively fill up your own cup? What are you reading right now or watching or, you know, nature you're staring at? What's the thing?
So, yeah, I think this is super important. And it's something that I definitely learned in the last year of like, you can't, not everything you do should make you money. Like, because for a while I was definitely just focused on like, is this gonna make me money? And that is, it's just my boyfriend keeps saying like, he's like, it's like you hate money, and I'm like, no, I just hate every project that someone might pay me for, which is like a challenge. But for me, like a big thing that helps me, I play a ton of The Sims 4, and right now I have. I'm on the sixth generation of a family. I started with Beth and Mike Hope, and they, the last name is because of Bob Hope, who I love, and also, you know, the symbolic, but I have played this family through six generations, and there are so many elaborate plot lines. Like, there's one woman who she's a vampire, and she's like, but she's depressed because all of her sisters have passed on because none of them chose to become a vampire with her. So she's living with her fiance, who's this, and this other woman is like, make me a vampire. But she's torn because what if I, like, if I make her a vampire, I'm dooming her to also watch the world pass in front of her like it is for me. And then I have another one who's the husband is a comedian. And his wife is a very successful, she's the chief of staff at the Sims Medical Center. And she's famous because she's an activist and she writes a ton of books. And her fame has surpassed his by quite a bit. And they just had a baby. And so now he's like, they're struggling with, well, how is he going to justify the nightlife that is necessary to be a successful comedian and like to become famous when they're also raising a child? So I have, there's like eight different households. They all have, one woman is like starting a family, even though she is the clone of a clone. And she's like, and she built like, she's trying to figure out like, what does it mean? Like, what is my humanness? And like, can I raise this child when I was an experiment? Like, can I give him a normal upbringing when I myself was an experiment? And I just sit there and like, people have told me like, you should stream this. And I'm like, I don't want other people involved in this at all.
This is for me.
Yeah.
This is not for you.
Yes. I have been doing this. This has been for probably years now that I have been like following this family and like their travails on The Sims. And there's like all sorts of different plot lines, and it is just for me. I put on my music or some ASMR, or like I half watch like a Twitch stream, and I play The Sims, and no one, and my boyfriend knows like this is the time, no one can talk to me but the dog. Like, I am just zoned in on this storyline and like their successes and happinesses and failures, and people keep dying of laughter. This family is cursed. I've had like three people die of laughter. Anytime somebody starts getting like too silly, I get really anxious. So yeah, that's how I'm filling my creative cup.
Wow. Because
I spend a lot of time dove into this like long family history on The Sims.
This makes me think of the board games on the floor in your room as a kid. It's the same.
Yeah. I do a lot of world building.
Yeah.
I have like spreadsheets filled with like, I made basically like 500 years of history for a fake country.
And you said you don't like details.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I am a big spreadsheet person. I like spreadsheets.
Yeah. No, you like spreadsheets of characters who you can control. It's these darn people that won't show up for rehearsal that are trouble. I believe me, I understand.
Yeah.
Oh,
the real people.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, yeah. Real people are trouble. That's why I'm like, oh, did you want the fantasy world? Best world.
Yes.
Best world ever. You know who messes it up? The other people.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, they have all these thoughts and opinions that they keep bringing in. And I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. It's going to work out the way I want it to work out. Right. Right?
Exactly. Oh my God.
That's so great. I love it. I love that it came like full circle to the games and stuff. Yes. 'Cause like, it's so perfect. Like you are playing now the way you played then. And it is so like, it calms you. And I'm so glad that you get that calm. That's so good.
I'm glad too. And so is everyone in my life.
Oh, Riley, thank you so much for being on the podcast. This has been a great chat, quite a deep dive into the, experience of what it is to try to be an artist in this world and a lot of the BS you got to deal with. But it's been really great chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun and definitely giving some thoughts for me now, looking back on things. Help me process things.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for. That's part of the process. Good. Yes. Awesome. Fun.
It's been super fun to meet you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Good.
Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.